If you're looking for trouble, you're in the right place. The baddest biker bar in the investment world. Welcome to the Danger Zone. Yes, this is the Danger Zone on Money Life. It's where we get the latest take from the experts at New Constructs, which evaluate securities on a scale of most attractive to most dangerous. They do it by bringing together discounted cash flow analysis and forensic accounting. They dig in at the footnotes level and work their way up. And what they find is that the skin deep readings that a lot of people give you tend to be misleading because the numbers they're based on aren't complete. If they're misleading and they could work for you, well, that would make something an attractive potential buy. But if they work against you, that makes it dangerous. And that's what we focus on here. You can focus on it for yourself by going to newconstructs.com to dig into their research on your own. David Trainer is founder and president at New Constructs. David Trainer, happy holidays. Great to have you back on Money Life.
Happy holidays. It is good to be back, Chuck. Thank you.
Who's in the danger zone this week?
Active portfolio managers.
Danger, danger.
Active fund managers. This is an interesting one, David, because, of course, we hear all the time active fund managers underperform the index, but we also know that, like, the ETF space morphing to give us a lot of actively managed ETFs, et cetera. So what's the problem with active management now?
The problem is that they still, on average, dramatically underperform at large. Like, as many as 97% over a 10-year period are not beating the benchmark. And I think what we're seeing with AI, what we're seeing with machine learning, what we've created at New Constructs precludes the need for human intervention in picking stocks. I have a vision of the market for, you know, being a much less exciting, a much less speculative entertainment vehicle that it's become. I don't think it's healthy. And I think that people are increasingly going to turn. We've already seen huge shifts away from active management, AUM, right? AUM and active management is going shifting away from that to passive. I think active ETFs is a death knell. Why am I going to pay 2, 3, 4, 5% to this active managed fund when I don't get performance and I can get a much cheaper version, whether it's passive or active ETF?
Okay. But if we're looking at a death knell on that basis, we're probably looking at traditional funds, because that's the only way you can get the expense ratios that high at a time when ETFs, now having share classes, we just saw big approval for like 30 plus fund companies to be able to put together an ETF share class of their traditional fund. And once they can do that, well, those are sold without extra fees, no extra layer of costs. And these days you can find actively managed ETFs that are 25 basis points instead of 1%, 1.5%, whatever it might be before you get extra fees added on. So isn't that gap narrowing?
It's happening, Chuck. I mean, they're just not going to have the revenue anymore to pay all these people because margins are getting crushed, right? When you're going from fees of, let's just say, 2% to 25 basis points, you know, that's a pretty big margin compression. 2% margin to a 0.25% margin, that's enormous. That's enough to put a lot of people out of business, and it will. It will put a lot of portfolio managers. And, you know, I said this recently in a discussion at Harvard Business School. The MBA students wanted to know, you know, how's AI going to affect my career? And I said, first of all, it's already happening, but there's just not going to be many portfolio manager jobs, period. Funds or ETFs. And the same is true, active or passive, for that matter, right? You don't need that many different versions of people trying to do effectively the same thing. For a while there, and maybe still the case, actually, I think it is still the case, there are more mutual funds and ETFs than there are stocks. Even in our own coverage universe, we cover like 7,000 ETFs and mutual funds. We cover 3,350 stocks. What does that mean? They're packaging up these things into more products than there are actual underlying products, right? It's like, it's a game. It's a racket. And it's ending.
Well, again, statistics that you guys looked at basically over a decade looking at performance, and basically in most categories, you're finding 90% or more of the actively managed funds underperform the relevant benchmark. But at the same time, the S&P 500, while it is a passive benchmark, it's passively active. I mean, when they make substitutions, They're doing them based on somebody making a decision. So are we taking humans completely out of this? Because to do that, you got to change the benchmarks too, don't you?
Yeah, I think that's fair, Chuck. I mean, I think it's all sort of part of a more philosophical discussion around, well, what is money management? And I shared a slide with you from my Harvard Business School talk showing sort of the evolution of AI and how it affects investing. And I do think we're going to be taking humans increasingly out of it. I mean, that's in many ways what you see with our core earnings leaders index. You know, that's beating the S&P like by, you know, I think 25 to 15%, you know, it's up 25 or the S&P's up 15% year to date. And that is effectively almost it's an AI driven index. That's because effectively we have machines taking the data from the filings, modeling, putting them into signals that just goes, you know, data feed just goes straight over to Bloomberg and they set up the index and whoever's tracking it, you know, that's just it. That's how it works. It's way more efficient. And we're not getting paid a lot. They're not getting paid a lot. There's no room to pay these big fancy portfolio managers anymore. And I do think that means that all the sort of speculative hype and nuttiness around stocks, guys, you know, guys like Jim Cramer and CNBC and all this media around it, right? Just a bunch of hoopla is going to get kind of wiped away. Real quality stuff like what you do will survive. But the speculative, you know, wild gambling folks, they're going to Polymarket. They're going to bet on sports.
They're going to bet on sports, or they're going to treat the market like they're betting on sports, which you can already do. But at the same time, if they keep their hands in the market, they'll do passive management to say, let me get a portfolio. It covers the basics for me. It gives me what I need. And then their active will be kind of all eggs in one or two baskets. I'll pick a stock or two around it that feels a little bit like a gamble, but mostly feels like a sure thing or they wouldn't be doing it. And I'll say, great, I've got my portfolio. And then I have my two favorite stocks. I mean, I think that's the way the average investor is more likely to go, aren't they? Because they're not. They want the feel of, oh, I can still do this and make big money. But the only way they're going to make big money in a world that is dominated by the robots, if you will, is to pick an outlier here or there and basically take a bigger gamble, a less diversified, bigger gamble.
It's a lottery ticket, right? It's a lottery ticket with a better sort of payoff options, right? You're more likely to get your money back and get a zero and go up. Like stocks tend to go up more than they go down. So it's a better option than a lottery ticket. But yes, I agree with you. And you don't need an intermediary to do that. That's the point, Chuck, right? You're going to have your active stuff, your safe stuff, and you're going to have your gambling stuff. And by the way, you're not going to pay someone else to gamble for you. You want to do it yourself.
One of the interesting things is that for folks who do invest with active managers, your research was showing that active managers, if they put up a year where they beat the passive stuff, they don't typically do it multiple years. That it's one thing to get there for a year. It's another thing to stay there for a half a decade or something.
Yeah. I mean, look, since I've been in the business, it's always been like 70 to 80% of all money managers underperform in any given year. And then the number that actually underperform, or the percentage that underperform over the next 2 to 3 years, quickly goes up to 90%+. And so it looks like a lot of luck. That's kind of why I say, look, why pay someone to gamble for you? Because that's what most money managers are doing when you look at their performance track records over time. They may gamble and get lucky 1 year, but the ability to consistently outperform, you know this business way better than I do, Chuck. Those folks are super rare. And everyone else is really just riding their coattails. And I think those people's jobs are headed for the wastebasket.
One of the things you said as you were setting up this research is, again, that in a number of categories, less than 10% of managers are able to beat their benchmarks. But what I noticed there was that in most of those categories, they are the plainest of the vanilla. Is there any sense that, like, look, if you're going to do something in emerging markets, or you're going to do something in microcap stocks, or the things that indexes don't historically do a great job of, because if you go with a microcap index and you own every microcap, nothing can make an impact. The ones that do well don't make an impact. The ones that do badly don't really make much impact either, but you can't get superior performance. Is there anything that says active management in the outliers of the categories?
I don't know. We didn't look. And so I don't have good data on that. If you ask me my sort to guess, I would say it's maybe worse. just because I think the categories that we're looking at here are the ones over the last 10 years that have sort of been the best. People tend to do better when the market's doing better. When the market underperforms, I think most people underperform. The outperformance is even more rare in poorer markets. And I think those more tangential, smaller categories have not been as strongly performing as these others. And so that would be my guess. But the honest answer, Chuck, is I don't know. You know, I should know if I'm going to go out there and say, hey, all active fund managers are going to the wayside. And it's not all. I'm just saying the ones that aren't really good, the ones that don't really outperform consistently, I don't see a reason for this world to continue where they get paid a lot of money to underperform. I think that goes away. I think people have too many other alternatives. I think if they want to gamble, they can gamble directly on their own. And third, I believe that the machines are coming, that AI is coming. We've built an AI for investing that works, right? Like the outperformance is ridiculous across all three Bloomberg indices, whether it's the Very Attractive Stocks Fund, our enhanced S&P 500 fund, or our Core Earnings Leaders Index. Sorry, those are all indexes, not funds. Those outperform this year and over 5 years. It's all just based on better data. And so why would anyone want to bet or invest based on luck versus better data?
Well, but again, if they were to invest in those indexes, they would be actively managing their money because they're using an active index, aren't they?
All of our indices are considered passive. And so, yeah, I believe the individual investor, they're active, right? They're not going to just, you know, but they choose, they're the active manager agent of their own money for sure, but they will choose more passive options or they will choose options where humans are not involved. And it could be active. I mean, you could say that our core earnings, for sure we could do an active version of our Core Earnings Leaders Index where we rebalance more than once a quarter, where we maybe don't limit it to 100 stocks and we don't limit each position to 4.5%. We don't have exposure to every single sector. Those are things that really make that index, I think, very, very safe and diversified, especially compared to the S&P 500, make it very attractive. But does it limit performance? Yeah, probably. But I'm not complaining because it's up 25% and the S&P is up 15. So, I mean, I'm not fixing it if it ain't broke. Are there ideas that we have actively, right, that we can't apply because it is a passive index? Absolutely.
Really interesting stuff, David. Always is. It's been a great year getting a chance to chat with you. You've got the holidays off, but we know that 2026, no matter what happens, there's going to be some danger there. We'll be exploring it with you. So happy new year. Happy holidays. We'll talk to you again on the other side.
Thank you, Chuck, and same to you. It's been a great 2025. I enjoy working with you.
That's David Trainer. He's founder and president at New Constructs. Go to newconstructs.com to learn more about how they do it, the most attractive and most dangerous stocks lists, and more. Up next on Money Life, the big interview. Brian Jacobson from NX Wealth Management will be here. We're talking about the economy and more when we come back in just a moment.
Oh, wow. This is actually pretty dangerous.